I think it would just be better off if we started wearing matching sweaters and showing up to places on a bicycle built for two.
New for 96. With your hosts, Kevin McCauley and Chris Nguyen.
What's in there?
What's in where?
The credenza.
Mostly styrofoam peanuts and crumpled up newspaper.
Oh, good.
Much like my briefcase. When there isn't, when it isn't only holding a sandwich.
A thousand jelly beans.
Yeah. I just carry the briefcase around to look important. That's
yeah,
it.
It works.
So, yeah.
People talk about it.
Yep. Have you ever carried around professional luggage?
Professional luggage.
A messenger like bag doesn't count.
Like a hard briefcase.
I guess that's the only type of professional luggage. I mean, there's a messenger bag, I guess. That was so popular like in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
2010s even.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I have a like a Tumi like soft briefcase.
Okay.
Like a nylon ballistic.
Yeah.
But I also like because when I worked at the luggage store, it was like it'd be stupid not to get this one. It's a good deal.
Wait, so the luggage, was it a Tumi store that you worked at?
Yeah. We had like multiple brands.
Okay.
But Tumi was like our big one. Tumi and Hartmann were like the kind of the big.
Yeah. I had a Hartmann.
Hartmann was cool. Like it, yeah. Like it's like this old. It's just like kind of like two sides of the coin of Tumi and Hartmann. And Hartmann's like kind of like older and southern and old money and like not techie at all. But like these, you know, the warm colors and the tweed.
Yeah.
My God, the tweed.
The tweed. My God. Yeah. And if you weren't careful, if you were wearing tweed pants while carrying your tweed briefcase, you could ignite yourself from the friction.
Yeah, we did repairs. That was a common thing.
On the tweed?
The igniting, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there like a tagline that you had to say? Like, you'll be tumescent for our tumies. It doesn't really work, but I'm realizing as I say it now. In my head, it was wonderful.
Wow. We didn't. I got a Tumi messenger bag with like Tumi points. And then I bought like at a huge discount. The briefcase, which I still have, and like if I ever had to have a professional meeting, I might bring it. I think I had brought it for like a portfolio thing once or something.
See, nowadays I can't even be bothered. Like a nice paper grocery bag is what I'll bring like stuff to a business meeting in, and that's about it.
Okay.
So I can't be bothered with bags. Plus, I have wanted to get something that was purse-like because I hate having things in my pocket. But once again, the paper bag, it's also great. Maybe.
Does the client, like, do they say anything when it's like the paper bag is from the Adam and Eve store?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, they can kind of see through it because it's greased out a little bit. So the grease stains.
The bottom is clear.
I'm sorry, the lube stains have made it semi-translucent.
Can I tell you what I did today?
If you must.
I made and sent to print my t-shirt for Redwood.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like your solo to be worn only by you.
That's right.
T-shirt. Okay.
Yes.
I really hesitate to ask.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
Usually, though, it's like, because I had an idea for a shirt that was going to be a very elaborate illustration, stupid thing.
Yeah.
You know, like a quick read, not one of those. So normally it's my designs, my jokes are only funny to me. It requires a lot of explanation and careful looking.
I was
going
to say, they're extra funny because they require explanation.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is not. This is a quick read. This is
okay.
Really simple, really dumb. It took
people
me
can
1 minute to make it.
Oh
yeah,
my God.
It took me 1 minute to make it. I sent it to print. It
wow.
already is being printed.
Wow.
I mean, when I say print, it's like print on demand. I can make these shirts for like $12.
Does
it's
the
amazing.
Printer ever like email you back and say, are you sure this is the design?
No, but I was really concerned that there might be a copyright violation.
Okay.
And the printer did have like a weird, like they wouldn't print. I had prints of Jaguar things that glitched a long time ago. And they wouldn't let me do one of the, had like a clear prominent Jaguar badge.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let me print it.
Oh, really?
They wouldn't because they're like, oh, this is a copyright thing. So I really thought this would be a copyright thing.
Yeah.
But it's not because it's already produced.
Now you've alerted like automotive manufacturers to the fact that you make bootleg branded products.
Yes.
And if they're one of our 10 listeners, then you're in trouble.
Well, this is not automotive brand.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Another clue.
I am very curious. Yeah. Your entire wardrobe is t-shirts, our t-shirts that you have made.
And my flannel.
And your flannel. And that one portrait of me half smeared because because you got it at a discount because it got smeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We never actually made that, did we?
I don't think we did. We should. We should. Maybe that should be my Radwood shirt.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Okay. I think I still have my Radwood costume from last year.
Okay. This you're about to have the smeared.
The smear?
One. Yeah. You said a large infant.
Obese infant. That is my size. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you son of a bitch.
What?
You know that we can't go anywhere. We can't show up to the same place anymore because you've just purchased a new car,
mm-hmm.
and it is basically the same car as me.
Yes.
In form factor. And so I think it would just be better off if we started wearing matching sweaters and showing up to places on a bicycle built for two.
I've been wanting to do this for years.
Yes. Okay, so why don't we kick things off on this episode of
New
for
96
exclamation
point.
Yes. Never say the exclamation point.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it needed a punch up.
Yeah. So now the cliffhanger.
Oh, yes.
So let's start at the beginning. You did get a new car. However, it has not arrived yet.
It's not arrived yet.
But why have you decided to get new transport?
I don't even know. Like, you never talk about your AMG E63 wagon. So I don't know if people know that that is what you've been driving for a year and a half or
2 years. Yeah.
And I think it's somewhat known. I have a Lexus IS300 Sport Cross, and it is, I'm giving up on my Sport Cross. It is having too many problems. I mean, this is a car that I bought in a bit of desperation for little money and in 2019.
Yeah.
And it had 175,000 miles when I got it, and I have replaced seemingly everything on it, and it is just as shitty in terms of interior, exterior, driveline, and suspension.
Yeah.
Besides that, it's great.
Amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't need those things. No. So you decided to do this to buy a cheap Toyota because you had a good experience with buying another cheap Toyota prior to this.
Correct.
Yes.
Well, that one, my cheap Prius, I think that was bad because it was a bad car and also it was a hybrid.
Yes.
So this robust engine.
Yes.
Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
2JZ.
Yep.
What could go wrong? Honestly, I'm not like, oh, it's not, for 3 years, it's not like, oh, the repairs are getting too much money, too expensive. I mean, the total I've put in this car is eye-watering and appalling and embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, humiliating how much money has gone into this car and for 3 years. And it's, and for most of that time, up until like 3 weeks ago, it was like, well, I am spending too much. This car is not worth it, but it is enjoyable to drive. Like, I like this car. I like what it, you know, I like how it looks. Yeah. I like the uniqueness. And I am paving the way to a restored, immaculate Sport Cross. And then, like, in the last 3 weeks, it's like, as I've had the fourth check engine light in 4 months, it's like the delusion is lifted, and I realize I've been completely delusional. And, like, the paint looks horrible. Like, it looks just as bad.
Yeah.
You know, I spent $6,000 in maintenance on it in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
And it currently has a check engine light.
Yeah.
It looks just as bad or worse than 12 months ago.
Yeah.
It squeaks more than 12 months ago.
You basically just been keeping it alive instead of restoring it, really.
I've been keeping it alive, but that makes it seem like I've tried to be proactive. I've tried to do everything I could. I've not gone and the shop recommended, you know, you should do this, and I said no. That's too much. It's not like I'm turning down service. Like, right. I will do whatever,
deferring.
And it's still just not enough. And I did the timing belt and cam gears and stuff last year.
Yeah.
The VVTi, and then I found out at the beginning of this year that, like, the shop that was doing all that probably did bad work using bad parts and Amazon stuff.
Which
and
is a shame because like it's a Lexus specific
right. And I had good experience with them. I liked the professionalism. I liked the courtesy. Like I don't need a fancy experience, but I like a fancier experience that's a little bit closer to a dealership. And I like when you can say, I'm going to take my car in at this time and just wait for an oil change, or they'll give me a loaner or whatever. And it's not like, take it to this weird place and, you know, and talk to them and ask for Hank.
Yeah.
And between this time, and it might take 2 days and it might take 3 hours. And I don't know, like when I tried to ask, you know, the car, Modern Air Cooled got me in. Our friends at Modern Air Cooled got me in they just looked at it because it was going to take a week and a half to get into the Lexus place. So I had a check engine light. They looked at it. They identified a bunch of stuff that had been done wrong and whatever. And I'm like, great. Well, now I don't even know where I'm going to get my oil changed.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go to Jiffy Lube or whatever. I could go anywhere. But I was like, I don't have like a place now to go.
Yeah.
And I'm like asking the three people at the shop, like, where should I go? And they all had different answers, and all of them were a variety of like, well, go to this weird place. Oh yeah, it's not gonna be a good experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like come to the shop at after hours and bring the oil and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is like, I hate doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just, once the delusion was lifted, I'm over it. And I said, like, and so selling the car, getting rid of it, moving on, it's like, was such a relief. Like it was finally not stress, but this feeling of, I want to make this car perfect, and yet it's still degrading faster than I can fix it.
Yeah.
Like that suddenly feel like it's realizing it's not my job anymore.
Yeah.
Like that was such a relief. Like that was therapeutic.
You still have to sell it, so
I still have to sell it. I mean, I'm not like, I'm still gonna sell it.
Do you think that if the car were in perfect aesthetic condition, you'd have been a little bit more convinced to keep it going?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
Because in a way, like, cosmetic stuff is more troublesome to deal with than mechanical stuff. Although you've had your share of both.
I've had both. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, the suspension, I've overhauled as much of the suspension as I could, basically twice.
Yeah.
Not necessarily fully twice, but a lot twice.
Yeah.
And it squeaks. And the last suspension stuff was just in December. They did all the lower control arms, and that actually brought out more squeaks.
Yeah.
Because it put more pressure on the stuff that was worn out. The interior has the sticky dash, which is now covered in cat hair.
Yeah, so it's basically fabric now.
Fabric dash. It's felt.
Yeah.
And then the paint, which was not great when I got it, is worse now.
Yes.
It's due to me being overzealous with a pressure washer.
Well, cars aren't meant to be completely waterproof, the paint especially. You've at least experienced the proving the myth of the unbreakable Toyota.
It's 20-year-old car problems combined with, we don't know what life this car had in 175,000 miles before I got it. You know, it was an inexpensive car for so long and changed hands and whatever. And I mean, if you remember when I bought this car, it's like, my criteria for a sport cross, I needed a car. I really wanted a sport cross. It's a very uncommon car.
Yeah.
And I needed it like somewhat quickly. I mean, it was October when I sold the Prius.
Yeah.
And I waited 2 months.
Yeah.
And I bought this car in December. And I mean, I did need a car.
Yeah.
And I was a little, you know, obviously. So my criteria, it's like, I'm not buying a car with more than 100,000 miles. And then it's like, okay, well, certainly not more than 125. Well, definitely not more than 150. And then it's like 6 weeks later, it's like, well, here we go. I'm getting on a plane to buy a car with 175,000 miles that had a catastrophic issue 24 hours later.
But the shop that did the PBI, they were able to catch a few things here and there, right?
I did not do a PPI.
Have you ever done a PPI? This time not included.
I did a PPI on a different sport cross and they found rust.
Oh, yeah.
So I bought a California car
because
it didn't need a PPI, no rust. Checks out.
I guess. Yeah. I'll make this quick because we should get on to what car you actually bought as a replacement. But we had a disagreement on my LX, which it was a 2006 LX 470 100 series Land Cruiser that, and I bought it with 230,000 miles on it. Kevin is pretending to fall asleep right now, but it is the ultimate Toyota. And I'll counter it with this. You don't believe that that car like is as bulletproof as people make it out to be. I'm going to argue, even though I only had it for like 3,000 miles and I put some money into it just to kind of baseline it when I got it, it was perfect there on out, like no issues whatsoever. And I know the new owner too, and the new owner has not had any issues, and he actually drives the car and tows like a boat with it. And I think there's a difference. Okay, so there, I think the bulletproof Toyotas are Camrys. Maybe some generations are better than others, but for whatever reason, I think those are built to just last through abuse, meaning like no maintenance whatsoever, and then skip over everything else to the Land Cruiser, which is hand-built, and they cost like $70,000. Well, that one cost like $70,000 new, always dealer-serviced. And so even into, I think this one was a dealer service to 180,000 miles. I think that's why they tend not to fail. I think it's when people start deferring maintenance and it starts falling apart and it's just not cared for.
Right. I mean, any car that gets so cheap and people have it and they don't necessarily keep up with it.
I wonder if like the Camry, because it's such an appliance car and people don't really like, you know, I think the average person is less likely to take it to an indie if they don't know anything about cars and are more likely to take it to the dealer for everything. And so I wonder if there's like kind of, you know, first owners at least, maybe second owners, take their cars, their Camrys to the dealer up until like six digit mileage. And that's why they last for so long.
I don't think so. I don't know.
Versus like the Altima, that it's only purchased by irresponsible people who like, you know, the car dies with the oil that was filled in at the factory.
I'm sure that like nothing on an Altima is made to be serviced because they know that it will never come in for anything again. It will just run until it does not run anymore.
Yep.
The valve covers are probably held on with rivets. Like, you know, like it's not meant to be re-screwed.
No. It's probably just like the entire engine and all its parts are just cast in place. So let's get on to the important information.
I do hate that you, like, I appreciate the showmanship, but I do feel like drawing this out is wholly unnecessary. But
I guess we already kind of hinted at what it was already.
It was a good hint. You can tell who my counsel was on this decision, but it is a 2016 Mercedes E-Class wagon.
An E350.
Is four-speed
automatic.
It's got a four-speed automatic.
It's a 4MATIC. And it is, what is the color? Oh my God.
I do not remember.
You remember the color of everything.
I know, it's a weird name.
It basically, it's like a darkish, like desaturated blue.
Yeah.
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 And in German, that sounds more elegant, but...
Yes.
It's a good-looking car. It's exactly the spec that you were looking for,
it
almost.
Yeah, it's 95% there.
Yeah, so basically the things that I've always had troubles with outside of the engine, the panel roof, this one does not have.
No.
So you're free and clear there. And this has the... Well, I guess I didn't have trouble with this, because my... So yours is a facelift. Mine is a pre-facelift. Mm-hmm. And my car did not ever come with the big star on the grill.
Right.
And yours also does not have that because it has the luxury package.
Yes.
Which has the old kind of radiator grill.
Yes, yes. So when you look, so both of ours are S212 generation. The facelift, people heavily went for the AMG style grill on all of them. So it's a big star with like crosshairs.
Yep.
It's like a Dodge.
Yep.
And the less common is the luxury, which has a much less aggressive bumper. It does not have the pretense of being a fake AMG, which I really like that. And it has the traditional radiator grille with traditional three-pointed star. So I think it is very elegant. I like that it's not shouty. it is everything I would like, everything I'd want in a Mercedes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, it'd be hard to get a Mercedes that is trying to be this like performance thing when it's not even the performance.
Yeah, because one. Basically all of the new ones, they're very, you know, even I don't know if they still have like the luxury trim with a traditional grill anymore. I know the previous C-Class and E-Class, I think you could get it with the grill and the hood ornament. But I think that might be all out now.
Maybe I think the hood ornament's been gone for a while for like pedestrian safety.
Oh, maybe. Maybe the S-Class still has a traditional grill at least. I don't know if it has.
I think it might. I think it does.
Yeah.
I think it does.
But that does speak to just kind of like when an E-Class used to be such an elegant adult vehicle.
Yeah.
No sporting pretenses. It was just like a fine object.
Right.
And, you know, the facelift with the AMG Sport attachments to it made like a not sporty car, because it's not like the non-AMG ones are like very comfortable and smooth and floaty as opposed to like bone-shattering rides.
Right.
So to have all that like garnish on it, I've never liked it, but
yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I feel like that's been a complaint. I mean, we've talked on this very podcast about, you know, kind of what Mercedes is missing with like current cars. And I think a big part of the, I mean, we've both voiced our displeasure with BMW and Mercedes and these brands, these story brands that we used to love everything they did. And then it's like, where has it kind of gone wrong for us? I mean, they're obviously still making money. There's obviously people are buying the cars, but like, what is it that where we're not fully on board with like what these brands are doing? And I think it's like a big problem is these just everything's AMG line. Everything is M something and just overly sporty, overly aggressive and shouty. And it's like, okay, well now the real performance ones have to look insane and awful. And then the normal ones look like super aggressive. And it's like, and sometimes you just want elegant.
It's the dumb algorithm, cap algorithm, I think is what, you know, basically all cars have faux sporty pretenses now as a baseline.
Yes.
If it's not an SUV.
In which case they have faux aggro, fake off-roading pretense.
And because that's what sells. And so I get it. Like, you know, they've determined via the data that this is what sells, which is kind of unfortunate. I mean, I bet you if you had not purchased this car, the next person who bought it or the person who would have bought it would probably have swapped out the grill. I bet you, you know, if you pop this on bet, someone would ask about, like, how hard is it to swap out the AMG Sport grill on this thing? And because I saw two E63 wagons listed on Bring a Trailer and Cars and Bids today, or one on each site, and both of them had, like, a retrofitted, like, a period incorrect star grill.
Wow.
Yeah, and they both looked terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's... I think you've bought like one of the last elegant E-Classes. The next one is fine, I guess.
It's just very vanilla. Like that design language is, you know, it just kind of looks like an egg.
Yeah.
The one I got is the mid-morph facelift S212, which I do like that it's, I think it works better on the non AMG's, you know, on the luxury trim, I think it works better, and the wagon works a little better. But it is the kind of squarish 212 with the very roundy or very kind of odd shaped headlights. But it is I like it. I was critical of this design at some point, but that's also because you only would see the AMG grill version. So on this grill, I think it works.
I think it's such an honest presentation because it has the small wheels. It's got the 18s.
Yes. And they're 17s.
Oh, they're 17s? Oh, yeah, they're 17s.
Yeah.
They're 17s, so it's got a little bit of sidewall, but it's somehow still very elegant. And because, again, like, I think big wheels, I guess you can interpret that as luxury, but I usually interpret it as sporty.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, this reminds me of, like, old E-Classes, like a W124.
Yes.
Where, why was that car... Why did we think in period that was such a fancy car versus like a 2023 E-Class? One, it's hard to distinguish it between a C-class, and an E-class.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't look at it that way anymore. Like, I look at it as, a lease special. When I see one on the road, I don't think, oh, there is a bank manager driving around. I just think, like, it's just someone who has, like, a $240 a month lease, and that's it. So it's not fancy anymore. But why is that? Why were those old Benzes so special?
I mean, I guess it was more of a commitment. I guess you had to be actually well-to-do to get one. I mean, it's any reason, I think, is basically gatekeeping is why it was special then. But I mean,
there was
a lot fewer luxury items in that time. There was, and also the visual distinction, the presence of a car like that was so different from your, you know, Nissan Maxima that might be the same size that was a car. And whereas now, like, I was in horrible traffic this week behind some things, and I'm looking at, like, a current E-Class coupe and, like, a Fusion or something else, and it's like, if you squint, they all kind of have the same shaped taillights and like the same trunk cut line and the same bumper that goes all the way up, like, it's like a bumper cover that goes all the way up to the taillight, you know. It's like that linear 90s Benz thing, which, you know, goes all the way back to way before that. It was still unique looking. There wasn't a lot of stuff
It was also, like, austere. Like, the designs were very austere and straightforward. And I think somehow that translates really well into, like, luxury or a fine item, because it's not trying to be anything else. Like, let's say, you pick the mid-90s, a W124. At that time, compact cars, say, for instance, you know, at the entry of the market, they all are, like, kind of curvy and try to do things just to bring some sort of excitement to an otherwise, like, econobox. And the Mercedes is just straight lines, straight flat panels, and it's like a very simple presentation, but it looks well made. And I think there's one more thing that maybe I've just thought of this now, but is it also because there are so many, like, products now in the Mercedes lineup and in every single luxury manufacturer's lineup now, like, has the, you know, appearance, like, has the GLA helped to bring down the brand a little bit? Because then you see Mercedes is everywhere, as opposed to before it might just be, you know, every once in a while you'd see one, or you just see, like, fewer of them on the road.
The problem isn't the problem isn't that you see too many GLAs. The problem is that all of them look like GLAs. Like, all of the Mercedes looks like GLAs. You know what I was thinking of while you were talking, and I came up with a better point, is I was looking at magazines today, and I was looking at these old Wired magazines from the early 2010s, and I kept stacks of these things, and I was like, well, this design is, like, very radical and whatever. But it was like, now it's like, well, the stories are really out of date, like tech articles, and then the designs are, like, really out of date because it's so on trend. And Mercedes didn't follow trends until these last 15-20 years. These last 15 years, like, where they didn't really follow trends. They kind of just, it was an evolution. They followed market trends on size and proportion and obviously features and stuff, but the design just looked like an advancement of the 1960s, you know, through the 90s. It was just getting refinement. And now there's a lot more outward, like, influence from other things. It's like, these companies are doing this, and everyone's just sort of borrowing ideas. And it's not Mercedes doing trends. Everything just looks of the same.
Interesting, because, like, manufacturing capabilities now allow you to come up with all sorts of design options. Basically, you can shape the car in any which way you want. And it does seem like a lot of people are doing basically the same thing. Somehow, with all of this capability, they're kind of producing all the same, like, exterior car. And that's kind of a shame. But, you know, we've had this conversation before, and while you were talking, I was thinking of something else.
Okay.
And we talked about how especially modern Mercedes, it is now a trickle-up design exercise as opposed to trickle-down, in which before, all the models, like in the mid-90s, it was the S-Class that set the design standard, and then you kind of got every single model underneath that was influenced by that. But in current day, it is the opposite.
I don't think it is.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, where do you think it comes from? Because I don't think it comes from the S-Class.
I think it does. Like, I think that 2014-ish S-Class was the first of the egg language, and everything kind of fell under that. And then the new language, which is a slightly different egg, it kind of started with that S-Class.
I think it...
Because they did the S-Class, and then they did the E.
I thought it was the other way around, and it was the C-Class introduced, like, the new design language for the current lineup, and everything kind of followed
maybe.
Suit.
I don't know.
So
you might be right.
I'm not sure.
I do remember with the last C-Class, S-Class, like, the S-Class came out, and then the C-Class was, like, next, and everyone was really wowed by that interior, because they said it was, like, S-Class level
yeah.
in the C-Class size.
Yeah.
I didn't really see that.
I didn't see that either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've only been in, like, that AMG that was a really terrible spec, though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure a luxury C-Class might be better.
Maybe. The rental that I had?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know. For the price of, like, we bought our cars for the price of, like, not even, like, a new Camry, really. Mm-hmm. New Camrys are expensive. Yeah. Like, at least top-of-the-line ones. But it's still, like, in my eyes, I still see it as, like, a fine object. Like, it's just a well-built object. Like, I was telling you the other day, I was replacing, like, this handle in the trunk. And I had to remove some trim pieces. And I was, like, astounded by how many things were screwed down as opposed to just clipped in, like,
oh,
it would
yeah.
be in other cars. And the car is mostly rattle-free. Like, with 77,000 miles on it now.
Wow.
And, you know, the only thing that rattles is the panoramic roof, which sounds like it's going to shatter whenever I go over bumps.
It.
I did not fix that one yet. The heat fixes it because it expands and fills into its slot, I guess. But
okay.
Anyways, so it's going to come, your car is going to come next week.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It got loaded up onto a truck from Virginia on Thursday. Day.
Yeah.
Or Wednesday.
Midweek
Wednesday.
Sometime.
Yeah.
And
anyway, we didn't talk about how I arrived at this
yes.
choice.
How I tricked you?
You did. Yeah. You. I immediately came to you with looking for car recommendations.
Yes.
And I wanted something to replace the Sportcross. And I was willing to spend more money, but I wanted it to be special and relatively fun and nice. And Jordan, friend of the pod, he recommended a Cayenne V8.
Yep.
Because of course he would say that.
Of course.
Keep me tied to him for
yep.
forever.
Yep.
And you mentioned this. You also mentioned some Volvos, and we kind of looked at some of these options, and
yeah.
the Mercedes was the one that appealed to me.
Yeah. Because your requirement, it needed like at the minimum fold down seats.
Yeah.
And it also needed to be automatic.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? What was the other criteria?
It has to be four doors, has to be automatic, and has to be able to fit a wheelchair
yes.
in the back without folding down the seats
yeah.
for my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
So that rules out small sedans. Most SUVs are probably applicable.
Yeah.
And most wagons are applicable,
yeah,
of which there are very few. And so when you talked about the E-Class, I was engaged. I was interested because I like the look of it. I like the idea of it. And then I really like the third row
yeah, the
jump seat. I thought that was extremely cool. Like gaining a new capability is
yes,
cool.
Yes, yeah. And like this, it's mostly reliable. I mean, it's a German car.
It's a German car. I'm prepared for some pain, but it is... It's the last, like, NA E-Class. Maybe one of the last NA Mercedes full stop, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure about that. But
The next one had, I think, an NA V6 still, and then the inline 6. But the base models, if this was the equivalent next generation, it would have been an E400. So you still would have had the NA V6.
I thought the 400 was the twin-turbo V6.
I don't know if it's twin turbo.
There's
it could
a 3-liter V6 twin turbo.
Okay.
That came in the next generation.
I think this one is still NA, but or that one is NA. But then otherwise, like most of them are like 2-liter turbos.
Yeah.
Which in a, you know, this is not meant to be like a classes thing, but like in an E-Class.
Yeah.
It's such a shame. Like, yes. But that said, like there are so many like $70,000 cars with 2-liter fours.
Well, and that brings us to like, there will be plenty of time to drive electric cars in the future and 2-liter 9.4s.
Yes.
Like, it's like, I don't necessarily want to commit to that right now.
Yeah. This is, you know, as far as like practical daily drivers go, like, this might be the last one that is most satisfying to you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, who knows? In the future, you might find an EV that fits your needs.
For sure, yeah.
So, when you get the car next week, was there any moment where you wanted to relive your 992 trip where you hopped on a DHL plane and rode with the car?
Oh, but this time it would be like on the
truck. Yeah, on the truck. Maybe you ride in the cab with the driver for like 18 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Did you get a tracking number? Is it like FedEx?
It's not like FedEx. I don't have a tracking number.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
How it would you be know curious when know it's delivered? It with those package thefts nowadays.
But we looked at the Volvos, and I do think that like the V60 looks really cool, and the V90 looks really good, but
yeah,
it's just...
I agree. Ultimately, the Volvo design language is so good.
Yeah.
And the wagons look amazing, and very... Actually, they look really unique. Like, they look really unique. Long and low slung.
Yeah. And like muscular.
Yeah. And it would have had all, you know, the modern conveniences and whatnot, but ultimately... Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think you would have been, like, you just would have driven, like, N car.
Yeah, and also, they're, all the ones that I could find, like, the V60 is so new that basically it came out in 2020 with the current design. So that is, for my price range, that would have been, I would have been very limited on options, so I only would have gotten a bad color, like black and, or white. And the smallest possible engine configuration, of which they're all the same engine, but there's like, you can get 2, 4, or 6 turbochargers on top of it or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
that's what T5, T6, T8 mean.
So it would have been the slowest one in the worst color. And
you could have gotten the plaid interior.
The plaid is so cool.
The plaid is cool. I didn't even know that existed until like... We were doing that search.
It is cool. But the E-Class that I bought has 38,000 miles.
Yep.
It is, I mean, I'm not saying it's definitely going to be fully reliable, but it is the final year of that generation.
Yep.
And it is NA, and this was the basically the lowest mile one in the country wagon. So, and it's a color, you know, like I was debating, it was at a dealership in the DC area. I was debating, is this the right car? Should I wait for another one that's similar condition? Because most of them, you know, 2016, that's 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so this has that kind of Land Cruiser proposition, except the opposite. I mean, people do run these up to high miles, but these are also always one owner.
Yeah.
Dealer serviced, no expenses spared.
Right.
Yeah. And we did find one car that was even more perfect.
Yes.
But lost out. It was listed and gone instantly.
Yes.
So describe that car.
It was a light blue 2012 dead person's car.
Yeah.
In Southern California. It was, it had 25,000 miles and was less money than this one.
Yeah.
And so that kind of gave me unrealistic expectations of what to expect.
You should clarify, by dead person car, does not mean that someone had died in the car.
No one died in the car.
That we know.
Right. I spoke to the dealer, and the guy who had taken it on trade-in, he talked to me. He's like, yeah, it was a great car. He's like, the person who traded it in, his father had passed away. He had kept the son had kept the car in a garage for 2 years, and he's finally like, it's, you know, I'm not going to drive this. I'm just going to trade it in. You know, he was a truck guy, so we would have gotten along for sure.
Yeah.
So he traded in. So this car came in on trade. It was, they like were not asking very much for it, and it got snapped up very quickly.
Immediately. And it was a cool color, too.
It was a cool color. It was light blue.
Light blue,
But the one I found, I mean, the one I bought, we did see it online
yeah.
the same day, and the deal was not quite as good to be true, but it was like, well, this is, you know, a good one, and I could clearly see, like, I'm not going to find another one that's going to be the same. There's not going to be another one that's going to be the same price with the same miles
yeah.
and a color as opposed to silver or black or white.
It was a fair price, and it like was spec'd out in the way that you wanted.
It was spec'd out in the way I wanted. No pano roof. Once I was on board, it was easy. To,
yeah.
It all just happened, I guess.
I honestly, like, this happened so quick. I was astounded. I did
really?
Not. The first, when you mentioned that you wanted to buy another car, I was like, okay. It's going to be a long, drawn-out process. He's going to hem and haw. But you were ready to buy that other one, the other E-Class. I did not think that... That was the one that I really wanted for you.
Right.
And you were ready to buy it. You talked to the dealer, like, that night.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was excited about that because I have been hemming and hawing for a year now.
We'll get to you. No, we will. I don't mean it like...
Yeah. I will say that you buying... this car has renewed interest, my own interest in my car.
Wow.
And I don't know if that means that I'm going to keep it, but I am, you know, the scales are tipping back towards that versus finding something else. I'm still looking on the daily for something. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do appreciate all your help with the search. And like I said to you many times, me asking you a million questions, or just like venting to you about the dealer doing BS and stuff. But we did have a good conversation over coffee one
yeah.
morning, where that's when I had called the dealer and I tried to unsuccessfully haggle on price. And they
yeah.
basically said, actually, someone's making a deal on it right now.
And I said, that was probably bullshit.
Probably bullshit. And
yeah.
so I was like, okay, well, this one's gone. The next day, they came back to me via text. They said, so are you still interested? And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
So it is not really worth walking away from it and still waiting, still driving this Warcross when over a small amount of money.
You were also just taking it, like, because it was purchased from a Toyota dealership, so it's a volume dealership, and so the service is commiserate on the sales side.
I really like the way you said, you're like, these people are salespeople. Every weekend they see 100 dads that are playing hardball, and they're
yeah.
like, I'm gonna walk away from this deal on this Camry right now. Like, they are so used to that, they've seen that a billion times.
Yes.
Like, you're not gonna out hardball them.
No. So in which case, like, you can't take anything personally, which I think you were like,
I did take it personally, because once I committed to the car, I was like, okay, I just want to make this happen, and they seemed to be trying to make it harder
yeah
until they knew that I was serious, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just, like, I knew it was just games, like, when they told you that there was another buyer.
Well, I mean, I was, and I did walk away and not stress. Like, I didn't, like,
that's true.
Call them multiple times of the day, like,
yeah.
hey, did that fall through? I was just like, okay, well, this one's gone.
Yeah.
I'll wait till the next one. And
yeah.
then they came back to me, and I was like, okay, well, then I'm going to get it. I'm not going to try to, I mean, it worked because I didn't really try to like get a lower price, but I was like, look, I don't want to like dance around this for weeks, because you're like,
yeah,
you're like if it's still for sale in a month, you could probably deal, but right now probably not. And I'm like, okay, that makes
sense. I thought
sense.
It was a little smug of you to answer the phone, well, look who's calling.
The weird thing is, the whole thing was done over text message, like all of it.
Yeah,
basically.
I mean, that sounds good to me. Like, I hate dealing.
Yeah, totally.
I don't want to talk to people on the phone anymore. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, for
honestly.
Sure.
But, okay, so...
Yeah.
I wish I had, like, convinced you to buy something, like, really stupid, though.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you some dumb things. I sent you, like, a ZDX, which would have maybe been a little bit interesting, even
yeah.
though it's an Acura.
Yeah, I hate Acura
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah. Or like
it's kind of my brand is like hating Acura.
Yeah. You know what? A Murano Cross Cabriolet would have fit your criteria. No hatch, but you just pop that top and you can put whatever you want inside.
But it's not four-door.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I guess. Is there a four-door convertible? I guess not. That would be...
Like Wrangler Bronco.
Maybach Landaulet.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay. On to the next.
So... I wanted to talk about the normal cars thing. This is transitioning to your own daily driver search.
Yeah.
But when you used to have, when you had your BMW E91 wagon, mm-hmm. you would frequently, in many dozens of episodes, complain or why you were getting rid of it.
Yeah.
You said it was a normal car. It was too normal. It was just a car. And yeah. I was like kind of, I don't know. It was, I was always like a little miffed because at the time I was driving this horrible Prius. And it's like, I want like a normal, like good, nice car that just drives like a nice, good car.
Yeah.
But I do know what you mean.
Yeah.
And so it's taken me forever to realize it. But like it was a normal car. It didn't have a sense of occasion, especially since you used to have an E90 that was faster
yeah.
and more sporting.
Yeah.
Like, It was just a car. It was special because you knew it was special, because you knew it was a rare rear-wheel drive manual
yep.
BMW E90 wagon, which is very cool. But it's only cool to you. It's only yeah. interesting to you. And it didn't really deliver anything special from the driver's seat, especially when you had experience with the E90.
So I
kind of get it. And then I think I understand, like, you have the E63 wagon, which... you have all these AMG things. It kind of revs when it starts up. Like, there is little reminders that you're in the special one. And it sounds like vain. Like, I don't mean for it to sound vain. Like, you need these little things to, but you're in the cool one.
Yeah.
You know, like, you were in the cool one, and it's, and that is, makes it a little bit magic, but it's like a daily driver, but it's a normal car. It's not a sports car. It's this.
Yeah. I'll liken it to just like, I guess, adrenaline junkiness, where yeah. it's just kind of like once you kind of like feel something special and a special attachment to a car because it gives you something back, then it's hard to go back to something that doesn't give you any sensation whatsoever.
Right.
And it's not to say that the E91, it was the perfect, like, it was a very good normal car. Like, it wasn't, you know, it was the manual was fine. It accelerated fine. Lots of feedback through the steering wheel. Like, you could get it a little bit sideways if you wanted it to. And it was fine. But like, otherwise, like, when you're just puttering around town, there's just like, it doesn't really give you anything back. Like,
right.
And this E63 is, it gives you a little something back. Like, whether it's the noises or whether it's the, you know, I meant to say suspension, which is like bone shattering, but
the transmission is also hard.
The transmission, the which is like 60% of the time I'm happy with it, and 40% of the time it is so bad. But yeah. but that's kind of part of the charm too, like
right.
its faults as
right.
well. Yeah, so it's gonna be hard to move on to another car if, you know, like, I don't think I could do, like, another Land Cruiser. I will give to you, like, that the Land Cruiser just drove, like, an truck. Like,
right.
it, despite this being the luxury one with AHC, the hydraulic suspension, it was still, like, it drove like a truck. And
yeah.
when you hit a bump, you could feel the chassis vibrate from the front all the way to the back. So, you know, it is what it is. I think that you'll get from the E350... kind of that sensation as well. I think just in that it is not just a sedan. I think the
yeah.
comfort and the quality
yeah.
is what you'll revel in.
Right. I mean, something as specialized as the AMG just would not work for me with driving 10,000 miles a
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And using it for a lot of practical things.
I barely drive my car, and I'm filling it with a quart of oil every like few weeks. Well, not every few weeks. There'd be a huge problem, I guess, but and they're just like, as it sits there, it is needy. So
yeah,
as that goes. I felt like that with my GTI too, which is why that one only lasted 6 months. Because
yeah.
I think I went backwards as far as like an automotive experience goes, going from my first E90,
right,
the 330i, and I got into the GTI. No, I got the GTI after the Cayman.
Yes.
Yeah, I had the Cayman, and I was going to use the Cayman as a weekend car and
yes.
the GTI as a daily driver. And the problem with that was that I was daily driving the Cayman for, at that point, like 2 years or something. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's an engaging car and it's fun to drive around town. And yeah. this was the base model. So you could rev it out a little bit, like at low speeds. And it
gives you like the sensory of it. Like, it's a special car. Like, yeah. It's not, you know, a prestigious badge within the Porsche world, but it is the, like, it is all these Porsche things. It is like a
yeah.
driver focused cockpit, like a great shifter, all that stuff. It's a mid-engine sports car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get in the car, like, it gives you this sensation.
There is something, yeah, that it gives back to you that makes you, like, attached to it or feel attached to it. And the GTI was fine. Like, it was, again, like the E91, it was a very good, normal car.
Yeah.
But I haven't driven, like, I mean, this is a tangent, but, like, a Mark 7 or Mark 8, and maybe those are somehow more magical than the Mark 6, but
I think they all drive the same.
Maybe so.
I drove a Mark 7 last year. I don't remember it.
Okay. Yeah. Very good normal cars are a great option when you just need something reliable that gives you at least speed when you want it, mm-hmm. or just something. But otherwise, like, if I don't drive enough to on a daily basis for that to matter, I guess. I'm fine with, like, a slightly unreliable car as a daily driver because, you know, it breaks once every 6 months or something like that because I only drive it, like, 3,000 miles a year, which actually really does not average out well if it breaks down every 1,500 miles, but...
Well...
Yes.
What can you do?
It's
which
fine.
Is, so on the subject of your potential daily driver search,
yeah,
that's why I think the Cayman GTS, like, makes, or the Cayenne GTS,
yeah,
Cayenne GTS makes sense because it is the GTS. Like, it is the one, if you're in the know, you know that it is the cool enthusiast one. And there
yeah.
is little GTS touches in the, I'm mixing
and
up everything, GTS touches on the interior.
The color is the most important part, because I've never owned a car that is a color. Even the E91 was Tasman green.
Wasn't your protege
green.
A color?
It was green.
Okay.
It was kind of like, you know, that era green.
Right.
Yeah, and my E91 was green too. It was Tasman green, but it kind of red-gray.
It was the gray of greens.
Yeah. I want a peridot green.
Oh, yeah.
A Shrek
so cool.
green, large, like, bulbousy SUV. And for some reason, like, I'm into the idea of this cartoonish, like, color on this car. I mean, it's a cool color.
It's a really cool color.
Yeah, it looks great on the Cayman R. Or
yeah.
The Cayman
yeah.
R.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first, I was opposed to the idea. I was like, it's neat, I guess. But, you know, who would drive such a bright colored thing?
I believe, as you said to me, I lie about where I am
yeah.
too often to have a bright green SUV.
Yes. I can't be identified.
Recognizable. You are, like... The only one within the 610 loop that is street parked
yes.
will be yours.
Yes. Yes. So,
Maybe it's that other guy. Maybe it's that other guy outside of Poison Girl in a bright green Cayenne.
It is a neighborhood dive bar.
Yes.
And yes, the wagon is discreet, but like even that, like someone's like, oh, hey. I see you're at such and such. I'm like, God damn it. You know, from a distance, from a mile away, someone will be like, I see Chris. I'm going to text him to see where he is. And I'm going to say like, I'm at home. You know, I'm tired. So that's not going to work out so well. But I'm excited about this. I've found a couple. They get listed, like Peridot Green gets listed maybe.
Here's what you do is you say,
what?
When someone says, where are you? You say, I'm panicking over my stolen Cayenne.
That's a good one, actually. I may use that.
Okay.
Peridot doesn't come up very often. Like once every 6 months or something, I'll see
six
like...
6 months?
Yeah. And there's one that's been listed for well over a year now. And
is that the one with the tan interior?
It has a tan interior, which is a really like unfortunate color combination. Like bright lime green
yeah.
over fleshy tan is
it's
bad.
Weird. It's yeah. weird.
I don't like black interiors typically. That's the alternate. You can get a gray one too, but no one ever respects that. If you get the peridot stitching on it,
ooh, yeah.
it looks really cool.
Do they do it on the dash and stuff too?
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I found one. It was peridot with all the options I wanted, except for the most important one of them all. And I've already declared that I will never go without this option again, and mm-hmm. it is heated seats.
Yes.
I need heated seats.
We do live in Houston, Texas. You never know when it might get a bit chilly.
It is 79 degrees outside right now, and I would have them on.
In February.
It is 32 degrees in LA and 79 here.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mentally bent my brains inside out trying to think, like, could I live without them? Also, can we just speak to the craziness of the fact that this car was like a 2014, I think, and someone had spent $118,000 on this car originally, every single option except for heated seats, and I think that was a tough dash man trying to prove a point that he doesn't need.
Certainly, that's what I would do.
Yeah, heated seats because, you know, he can tough it out, which I think is insane. So the search continues. That one sold anyways. It was very well priced, and I always know that a car is going to sell really quickly when a dealer only posts one photo of the car and never update it with any additional photos, which means that they're getting calls like every day about the car.
Yeah.
So why, you know, take the 5 minutes to take like really bad photos of the car when it'll just sell itself? The search continues. I'll also accept Carmine Red.
It's good.
Which is a good red, yeah. But I, you know, I don't really like SUVs except for the G-Wagon, short wheelbase, Range Rovers, and now I have warmed up to the Cayenne. And if it's going to be a Cayenne, which they have made literally like a million of them, it has to be a color or something to help me kind of feel like it doesn't just blend into like the sea of suburban cars.
There's so many gray Cayennes. There's so many things. It's such a, like,
white is the worst color for that.
It is really the worst.
Yeah.
This is not really like a great term, but it is like such a mom car.
Yes.
And
it's a very family.
Yeah, but that's why the GTS is cool. Like, I think it'd be hard to go from an AMG wagon, like the enthusiast car.
Yeah.
To any Cayenne that's not the GTS.
Yeah.
And
I thought about like the Turbo S maybe, because those are somehow like about as much, even though they were like tremendously more expensive originally. Mm-hmm. And
but I bet they're all bad colors.
They are all, yeah, they're all black.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I don't know why, like even just regular turbos, black, gray, or white. Like, no one ever spec them in any other, no blues, nothing. Yeah. It is amazing. On the flip side, I don't think I could do a base one just because it would just be kind of a slow, bouncy SUV. Or maybe not. Like, I rented or Turo'd one, and it was fine. But it was just that. It was just like a very good, normal car.
Yeah.
The VR6. But those people spec'd out in colors.
Oh, yeah.
And all those have heated seats. So, I don't know. We'll see where this journey leads me. Anyways, on to the next. I hear that someone got new glasses. Sorry, new glass.
New glass. Yes, I'll try to keep this short, but this week I was doing maintenance on my wife's Mini Cooper, just getting some stuff done, and it has had a cracked windshield for about an embarrassing long time, maybe a year and a half. Just like a little bit on the lower in front of you. It still passes inspection, but it's just like, it's not nice.
Yeah.
And so while I was at the dealer getting service, I asked them, like, who does windshields? You guys do windshields? You source it out? And they said, we source it out. We go to this company, blah, blah, blah. I immediately call the company and they can come out the next day to my house, do the install. And they say, do you want, They're like, we have a premium aftermarket. They're like, the OEM, so I'll say the prices. The OEM install, the OEM glass is $700 or $750. Like, we have a premium aftermarket that is just as good. And the only difference is it doesn't have the little Mini logo in the corner. And it's like $400. And I was like, wow, I'd be stupid to do the OEM one.
And that's how, like, they made you feel.
That is how they made me feel. So I said, okay, well, yeah, the aftermarket sounds good. If I part of me was like, I should have asked Laura what she would want, and she would definitely say OEM.
Yep.
And I didn't do that, and I also was not comfortable telling her what I had chosen. And so they come to this house. The guy was great, great installer. He did the thing, did the work, and the car, which like never sees sun or outside, like, you know, he said all the clips were good, all these things that are usually brittle and break in the process, it was good. Laura takes it to work. She texts me, she's like, there's stuff on the glass. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this information. So she comes home and I look at the glass and it looks like a smudge right in front of your field of vision as the driver.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, this should be easy to clean. I've got glass cleaner. I've got microfiber. I've got shop towels. Here we go. And I'm cleaning this. And when you're on the outside of the glass, it looks like, oh, it's on the inside. And when you're on the inside of the glass, it looks like it's on the outside. It looks like a big smudge. Like, it doesn't look like damage, doesn't look like scratching or anything.
Yeah.
It just looks like it's kind of slightly fogged in a smudge pattern, probably about 12 inches across, right in front of your field of vision. And Laura said it was annoying to drive because she said it kind of distorted her view, but it definitely looks like a cloudy section.
Mm-hmm.
So I call them and they came out. And first of all, I was annoyed because I was not annoyed. She was not crazy. She was totally valid. And I saw it. And then I was like kind of annoyed just at what they had done. And then I also felt like I was crazy.
Yeah.
And so they came out today and they looked at it, tried a bunch of different things and no difference. So we're going to get the OEM glass put in.
Wow. See, buy store brand.
Don't buy the store brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That goes for everything. I don't understand how people can buy like store brand like chips. It doesn't taste the same.
No, it doesn't.
No. So store brand glass, same thing.
Yeah.
Doesn't look the same. Literally, they're just something. This is probably a fluke. The store brand, the generic glass, probably usually is fine.
I'm sure it's usually fine.
But yeah.
Yeah, the guy, the installer was like, yeah, it definitely is messed up. It shouldn't be like this. I don't know how this happened. He speculated that maybe it got damaged or it had got scratched, and maybe while it was in storage or coming to them or something, at some point, maybe someone had tried to like buff something out of, like buff scratches out, and they abrased it in this way.
Yeah.
Because it kind of looks like circular rubbing marks, but yeah, like nothing would get it out. And he said that the OEM glass comes like wrapped from the factory, like sealed, so you wouldn't have this issue.
There you go.
Yeah.
Always get the OEM.
I guess. Yeah.
We don't always follow that really that advice all the time. No.
Not always.
No. So, although it has buying like a generic car part ever failed on me, or a I don't know. I don't think so.
But you're speaking specifically about with like Porsche parts on Pelican parts. It's like the genuine Porsche one will be four times as much. And then the like URL or something is
that's
less.
The thing. I think about that. I was thinking about like the last thing that I bought that was not a Porsche actual part were the taillight lenses, amber taillight lenses. And it's fine. Those are hard to fail, I guess. Like, I mean, they don't. I will say, maybe my taillight housing is not quite right, but they don't quite fit perfectly. So maybe I have store branded myself on those.
Maybe.
So
my new housings came in today.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you've got the ambers as well, but you have the classic, like I guess, reflective housing, right?
Reflective housing, and one of them is very crusty and kind of dark. So from behind, one side amber is amberer than the other.
Yeah.
Because of the housing behind it.
Yeah.
Because it's transparent taillight
and these
corner.
White ones basically like will make the taillights appear brighter.
They'll make it appear brighter. It's lighter weight. It's laser cut to fit, hopefully.
Yeah.
It'll be good. So we'll see. I'll know how it goes. I'll try to put it in next week. Probably.
Is this considered store brand or
no? Because it's custom.
It's custom.
The person that so the Canepa was using these.
Yeah.
On like a 934.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, if it's good enough for a Canepa 934,
this is like the premium store brand stuff.
It's not really the
like
same.
The organics.
There's not like an equivalent.
Is there a premium store brand product that is better than like the name brand stuff?
this isn't...
I'm going to stick with this analogy. I'm not going to let go of it.
Okay, so, fine.
All right. Yes. I think that might be a podcast.
I think so.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Do follow us on Instagram at newfor96. Email us if you must. What is it, Kevin?
I don't... It's newfor96.
AOL.com.
The numbers are spelled out. It's at Gmail.
Yes. And Twitter's there.
Is it?
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.